Hey, everybody. Welcome to season two of the Defy podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Troutman. And this season, we're doing something a little different. We're still going to be telling incredible stories of amazing women and non-binary individuals, obviously, but we are going to be focusing this season more on entrepreneurs, people who are in leadership positions in business, and having a better understanding of how people have approached solving problems with passion, the process that they've used to be able to create something amazing, and the profitability that they've been able to achieve as a result. So many of the questions that we get in this podcast are about career. So we thought, why not double down on this and use all of season two to talk about career and entrepreneurship? So we're glad you're here. We hope you learn something from this episode. We hope you enjoy and laugh in this episode. So come on, guys, let's get started and let's defy. Hey, you guys, if you can believe it, we have a real sponsor for season two of the Defy podcast. I know, I'm totally excited about it. And our sponsor is Arizona Autism United, also known as AZA United. And AZA United provides comprehensive services for people with autism and their families throughout the greater Phoenix area. And AZA United was founded by one of my really close friends, Dr. Aaron Blocker Rubin, also known as ABR. And he's pretty awesome. One of the things I really enjoy about their organization is that they understand how important it is to have clear values. And they have four of them. And I'm going to talk to you about one of them right now. And that value is this: grow with purpose. You need to grow with purpose in terms of how you grow your organization. You need to grow with purpose in terms of how you nurture your staff. And you need to grow with purpose with how you treat your families. And AZA United grows with purpose. And if you're someone that wants to grow with purpose, we welcome you to check them out. I have linked their website to the show notes. They have jobs available for people in all different job categories, from behavior analysts to RBTs to administrative support. And they're pretty awesome. And not just because they sponsor this podcast. So go check out AZA United and let's get on with the show. Everybody, welcome to Defy. I'm your host, Sarah Troutman, and I'm really excited about our guest today. I mean, but like, let me be honest, I'm excited about every guest, but especially about this guest. And my guest today is Hoda Mayer. Hi, Hoda.
Hello. How are you, Sarah, today?
Good.
I'm well.
I know. It's so funny because this is not the first time that Hoda and I have recorded a podcast together. So let me give you guys a little bit of background. Hoda is not in the behavior analytics space like me. Hoda is in the stock market space. And also, she's a badass CEO and founder of her own company. And I initially interviewed her for my other podcast, Data Dump for Noe, which is my data analytics kind of moonlighting job. And when I was researching what Hoda and her company StockCard.io are doing, and once we had a chance to sit down with each other, I was like, Hoda's amazing. She has a great story, and I would love to bring her to the Defy audience. And so, Hoda, just to let you know, most of our listeners are young and emerging professional women and non-binary individuals. Many of our folks are in the behavior analytic space, but not everyone. But part of the reason I wanted you to come on today is because I think for many women especially, the idea of understanding stock market finances, not something that we have been encouraged or socialized to do. And then the idea of not only understanding the stock market and finances, but then having the audacity to go out and start your own business that is fundamentally disrupting how people really think about the stock market is even more of a badass move. And that's what you've done.
Wow, so, I feel so good about myself after hearing all that. So thanks for confidence boost. But no, I'm seriously happy to be here and I'm excited to chat about I mean, you know, I can talk about the stock market and we can talk about behavioral stuff. They're all like very close. Women founders and paths to success all are very close topics, close to my heart. So let's talk about them.
But part of what I loved doing in the Defy podcast is storytelling. And so much of who we are is because of where we come from. I mean, we are our learning history. We are the culmination of all of our experiences and the people in our lives and in our environment. And so can you just kind of tell all of us a little bit about who you are in your family of origin?
Sure. So I was born in Iran. And actually I was raised there until I went to college. And my family also obviously lived there, but my parents studied in the U.S. So we had this sort of connection to the U.S. for all my life. We always had this conversation of like the difference in how you live in Iran and what's happening in Iran versus what's happening in the U.S. And we always knew at some point we're going to move to the U.S. and live here. It was just more my dad wanted us to be first Persian, mm-hmm. which is basically sort of what he always wanted for kids to have. And then he also wanted us to be sort of like the citizens of the world. And then so he always said, well, yeah, once you felt you are Persian, then it's the right time for you to go and live wherever in the world that you want to live. And he wanted us all to move to the U.S. So my story was sort of always thinking about Iran and U.S. and where to live and where to study. And, I talked about my dad just very immediately because a lot of my childhood is about the relationship I had with my dad and what I've learned from my dad. As a matter of fact, I think I told you the last time, in conversations with my dad when I was a teenager, I developed this passion for building companies or building interesting organizations and also investing in the stock market. So I learned from my dad to invest in the stock market. But I remember sometimes I think about it, it sounds very odd, but my dad and I had hours and hours of conversation about what is a good CEO, who is a good CEO, what is a good company. Mm-hmm. And we had all these, like, these are sort of conversations. I have these, like, nuggets of memories from very early childhood. Maybe, like, whenever I was, like, 7 and 8, mm-hmm. we'll talk about these things. And my dad talk about, oh, the CEO of that company did this. And he's, like, so his vision for the world is so amazing. So it's very funny to think about, like, as a 7, 8, 9-year-old, you talk about these things. But I've done that a lot with my dad. And then I remember my dad was really needy. Like, he was very needy-creedy about his wardrobe. And he was always in suits. And he is still, if you get a chance to, you know, get out of the house for something, he always wants to dress up very well. And I remember he would sit down at an ironing table and he would iron his suit and, like, get the lines very perfect. And then I would sit and read a business book for him. So that was his, there was no audiobooks at the time, or maybe there was, like, CD.
You're like, I was the audiobook.
And I remember my dad always telling me, oh, you have a really good voice for radio. I think he, like, dads think about their daughter, or like parents think about their kids, that they have the best things of everything, right? But, you know, so it's funny. So I remember I learned a lot of those things from reading those books, having conversations with my dad about building companies. I have and from early childhood I had these, like, dreams of building things. So my initial idea was I'm going to create an ice cream shop and then grow the ice cream shop because I really loved ice cream. I still do. and then kind of, like, evolve into all sort of different businesses and ideas. And as long story short, that's sort of my background, having this relationship with my dad in Iran, and then thinking about how I would move to the U.S. and start a company. Mm-hmm. And it would be this fantastic company. And I had all these dreams about what we're going to do in the company. That's sort of it. It's funny. Like, I was always born with this mm-hmm. desire to build a company that is mine.
It's almost like you've also been receiving these messages your whole life that, well, this is something that you can do. I remember you talking to Sean and I on Data Dump about how you would go with your dad to pick up, like, your dividends checks from the different companies that he had invested in. And so you know, finance, entrepreneurship, leadership has been, you know, cultivated in you since you were a little girl.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's it. So those are some of the good memories I remember. And it's always kind of ingrained in my mind. Business, finance, money. And they were never taboo concept, but as a young kid, it was never about, oh, I'm learning about finance. It was more like, oh, I'm talking to my dad about this thing, this topic, mm-hmm. right? Which happened to be money, you know? So it's an interesting way of looking at the world with the lens of money and finance. And I never felt this is a different finance, different lens. And I think I told you, until I did my MBA, like I was 20 something years old, and went and talked to my friends about their money, like just the conversation of money and topic like that came up. I always thought everybody is just like that. I thought like, mm-hmm. just like you learn about how to socially behave from your parents, you mm-hmm. also learn about money and everybody invests. To me, it was just this foreign concept of like, oh, you never had this conversation with your parents, never talked about money. So those were very strange to me. And then I gradually realized, actually, this is really, really different from a lot of other people. And, you know, that sort of inspired everything else after that.
How did you decide? I mean, because before you started StockCard.io, you had other positions, but what was there like a moment or a specific, you know, event that happened that made you decide like, I want to do this thing on my own. I got it. I'm ready to do this. I want to do this.
Yeah. I mean, I actually, when I started a stock card, I wrote a long blog post about why I'm starting, why I'm quitting my corporate job and why starting on my own. And there's like three different events in my life happened in my corporate job that kind of led me into starting my own. And all three experiences are not very happy experiences. They're all like experiences that really made me very, very sad at the time. And then sort of maybe those three and a combination of a bunch of other ones together just kind of frustrated me with the corporate life. And mm-hmm. then that made me think about, oh, I always had that dream of starting the company. So why am I not starting? Right.
Yeah.
So those were the sort of those three experiences. And I can kind of quickly talk about those things if you want.
Oh, no, absolutely. Because another guest that we had on the podcast, my girlfriend Gina, was this like super high powered criminal defense attorney. I mean, like making tons of money working in LA, defending, you know, really intensive cases. And part of what she said is she's like, I realized that the system was fundamentally, you know, totally and utterly not about getting it right. Mm-hmm. And also I was tired of asking permission to like live my life. Mm-hmm. And those were kind of like her light bulb moments of why she decided to really kind of go the entrepreneur route. So I definitely want to hear like what were kind of the three things that happened that were like really tipped the scale. And you're like, I need to do something else. I need to do something on my own.
Yeah. I think all three are different cases of, I thought I deserved more and mm-hmm. I didn't get what I wanted to get. Mm-hmm. And, I think there is a couple of things. So the first one is this whole experience of I always felt that I am in positions that I'm overqualified for, right? Mm-hmm. And it could be that totally wrong, right? It could be I was so young and I thought, oh, I can do everything I want, but these people don't get me. So I mm-hmm. don't know, but the feeling, so, you know, that's a different conversation. I guess I can talk about them at some point, but the feeling, the residual feeling of it was like, I'm not doing the job I deserve to do. Mm-hmm. And I'm always being, I'm always overqualified for the role that people are giving to me, or I'm always in my corporate job, I'm always underestimated for the, what I can do. Right. Yeah. So I remembered I'm always very hard worker, and I was always a hard worker in corporate job as well. And like working hours, long hours, late night, weekends, you know, I don't even understand what is, like what they say, work and life balance. I don't understand that concept. I generally don't understand it. I don't know where work stops and life starts. To me, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and then I go until I'm like dying and exhausted and I crash, and that's like who I am. And it's probably really bad for me as, you know, person, but mm-hmm. I just don't know. So I had the same attitude in my job, in corporate job. And I always felt I'm the one who is doing all the work and then never get the real recognition that I need. Yeah. Or like, I always thought I'm being passed on promotions. I don't get the promotions. So this was like this whole event number one is this whole feeling that as I get grow up in the corporate career, I'm always chasing what I think I deserve, right?
Yeah.
And I remember so many times I wanted to quit my job or talk to my bosses about this concept. And I remember several times I go to the offices of these people, and these are all very nice people. I still love them and I still talk to them and have relationship with them. But I went to their offices to ask for a raise or ask for a different position. And I came out with more work, more projects, and not more raise and not more recognition. So mm-hmm. that's sort of like one story.
Yeah.
Story number two is I love Amazon as a company. And it's just, I think a lot of people do recognize that it's such a good company in terms of like the story of how they built this company and how they went against a lot of odds.
It's pretty incredible. Yeah,
it is incredible.
Whether how you feel about Jeff Bezos aside,
that's a different story.
It's an incredible story. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Jeff Bezos as a person, I don't know him, but as a business person, he's done a fantastic job, right? And he's done it with a lot, maybe now he's a lot more flashy and, you know, in the news and things like that. But he's done it for many years, he was not a flashy person. He was a person mm-hmm. who's just like focusing on what he's building. He's very myopically focused on what something that they're building. So I have this, like I with big, big passion, I wanted to work for Amazon and I tried so many times. And one time, at the time I lived in Canada, I got an interview. They flew me to Seattle and I was over the moon. I'm like, I mm-hmm. finally got it.
Yeah.
And the way I got it, it wasn't that like I sent a resume to go and work for Amazon. I like stalked this guy or these guys or girls at Amazon that I thought I could work for them for years. Yeah. Send them email, build a relationship with them on LinkedIn, like a classic MBA example. Build
You were
networks.
Relentless. You were relentless and relentless. You were just working that network. Yeah.
I was doing that. And then after 2 years or 3 years that one day, one of these guys that I was trying to work with him, he called me on a weekend on my cell phone. And he's like, I know you always wanted to work. There's this opportunity. Are you interested? And I'm like, oh my God, the MBA things that they teach you works. You know, these guys are offering me to a job, an interview. So I flew to Seattle, went to Amazon's office. And there's this whole story about like how I made everything perfect. Like I chose the dress, I got my mm-hmm. hair done, I got my mm-hmm. makeup, everything perfect. And you know, these are all like great, like practiced my pitch, what mm-hmm. I would tell, went through the examples, called five people that I knew at some point worked in Amazon, and then practiced my interviews because mm-hmm. Amazon has a very specific interview. I mean, I did it all.
Yeah.
And then I went and they did the interview. I think it went well. And then sort of after the interview, kind of they dragged and said, we're interested, we're not interested, we're interested, we're not interested. It dragged a long time. Anyways, I was not probably the right fit. And then at the end, they told me, we want someone who is data driven. We think you are data driven, but you don't start your sentences with data. So that gives us a little, that was exactly. And I remember hearing these things from this HR person. I was like crying over the phone.
Oh.
I'm like, I did everything.
Yeah.
So it's like a very bad image. So it's very, I mean, I think it's very unhealthy to be this emotionally attached to a role, to a job, to a company, but I'm just a person like that. And to me, that was like a second. I'm like, I worked so hard to get this thing and I didn't get it at the end.
Yeah.
So that's second story.
Yeah. Now I'm ready for the third because these are like really good stories.
They're very emotional. I tend to be very passionate about things I do. And so I get passionate about companies and CEOs. And
I know.
Products.
Why do you think I asked you to be on the podcast? Duh. I was like, Hoda has incredible energy and she feels everything. And I fucking love it.
That's good. Somebody finally gets me. I know. So yeah, that's it. Then the third story is the story. Again, it's another interview story and similar sort of to Amazon. This is a company called Okta. Mm-hmm. And so sort of like a similar story to Amazon. I did everything perfectly. At this time, I was a lot more mature in my career, and I was interviewing with a very, very good role. And I feel I did it really, really well. And I feel I did it very well, but in you know, different circumstances. So the details of it, I guess, sort of similar to Amazon, it just didn't happen. And I you know, I kind of felt really emotionally drained at the end of that episode. And I sat down one day and I'm like, what am I doing? Why am I going through these cycles of feeling that I deserve more and feeling, and I put so much work and hours and energy and emotional, intellectual energy into these things, and then they don't happen, and then they're really draining, right? And then I end up going back to the office of my boss, and then get more work done and never ask for a raise. So it sounds very vain. I mean, just, but for me, it was just, I always felt that I'm not getting what I want, although I do everything that is in my power to do it. Right? Yeah. I just felt the odds are against me, stacked against me. And then at some point I said, well, the only thing I know is that I'm going to go start my own company and then just have all my decisions done, and kind of like it would be only me, at least, or like a lot of it would be me in terms of like making what I want happen. And then, you know, just that sort of was a trigger.
This is, and I think this is really important, because I think especially for many, many women in leadership, and especially for women that are in more traditionally male dominated professions, I think it is easy to have, you know, specific types of experiences. And we know that this happens all the time in work. It's like when you do a really good job, like your reward is just more work. And that, like, fundamentally from a behavior analytic perspective, we're like, that's actually punishing. So you're telling people, if you do well, we're just going to put more work on you. So it actually means that if I don't do as well, then I don't have to do as much work. Like, oh, okay. You know, I'll do that instead. But I think for so many people, if, you know, they're doing all of this work, they're getting more work piled onto them, they're having these kind of experiences where they're like, gosh, I thought I did all the things right, and I didn't get what I wanted. I think the default response for many people is just like, okay, well, I guess that's not meant for me. So I'm just going to kind of stay in this job that I might not be satisfied with. I'm just going to kind of do this role because, like, it's not horrible, but I don't love it. But, like, message received, like, I'm not worthy of more. And I like how you have framed this for yourself, where you're just like, hey, call me, you know, conceited or whatever, or like, I'm full of myself, but your, you know, decision was like, okay, these things didn't work out for me, so I'm going to make it work on my own. And that is, you know, it's like, we all have choices to make in life. And I think for a lot of people, that's the choice that they don't know how to make. How do you choose yourself and fundamentally have that, you know, self-confidence, and, you know, willingness to, like, take a risk? Because, you know, you're betting on you, and you're like, I can also exert more control at work. I, you know, can do the things in my company that, and this is how I was when I started my company, like, there was things that I brought in from other work experiences I'd had. And then there was things that I did completely different because I wished I would have always been at a place where, like, X was offered to me, or we spoke to each other in this way, or there was this type of, like, culture or opportunity. And so I think that is awesome, because that's where I think, again, so many people get stuck is, I have this negative experience at work, I feel like I'm not doing great, so that just means I can't be great, versus you're like, no, I just need the opportunity to actually show that I can do this, so I'm going to do it myself. How long, you know, did it take you to kind of really kind of conceptualize Stock Card IO? And I think especially for people, you know, that are listening here that don't necessarily understand, you know, what it means to start, like, a tech company. Like, did you seek outside funding? Like, what was your process that kind of got you to, like, your minimum viable product?
Yeah. So, I mean, the idea of a Stock Card maybe came about over the course of years. As I was doing my corporate job, I also had always interest. I mean, had interest in investing, right? So maybe for the course of a couple of years, I always was thinking about something about the stock market is just so interesting to me. And, you know, I was an investor on the side, and sort of I never thought about it would be a company that would be focused on investing. I a lot of thought I for a lot of years, I thought I would eventually create an investment fund mm-hmm. and then basically like manage money and things like that. But I was not in that kind of line of work, right? I was in corporate strategy and do M&A due diligence and, you know, long-term planning and short-term planning, all that kind of stuff. That was sort of my background strategy. So on the side, I always thought, oh, maybe I would retire early and then manage funds and do something like that. But then these two sides came together, this side of, okay, there is this whole working for technology companies and doing strategy stuff. Kind of I realized there is this possibility of building a product that is not managing fund, but it's related to what I'm passionate about. So mm-hmm. the idea sort of kind of cooked over the course of got baked over the course of a couple of years. But when I kind of knew what I want, it took me like 6 months to quit my job. I went to quit my job and they told me to stay 2 more months. Because, yeah, of course, because I do a lot of work.
Okay. I'm indispensable, so, obviously.
Yeah. And then they told me, can you stay 2 months? Because in the first month they said, okay, can you finish all your project in the first month? And then can you just stay around for another extra month and just make sure everything is okay? And I'm like, really? Is that that much? Really? Like, that's what you need me to do? And I told them, I'm not coming to work. The last months, I'm not coming mm-hmm. to work. So you guys need me, call me, and if you want to pay me, I don't know. But sort of like I showed up to work, and that's kind of our arrangement. They wanted to just make sure everything's just going on well, and then they make sure nothing is gonna get broken, I guess. And I left. So after 2 months, I put my notice, and then it took me 6 months, 2 to 6 months to kind of really get out. And then as I got out, it took me another 6 months to get some sort of an MVP out. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a technical founder. So I don't know how to code. And at the beginning, I tried to learn how to code. And I really, I'm that kind of person.
This is not for me.
No, but I mean, it's funny because I always think I can do anything, right? It's weird. And I recognize that, well, I can't just code in 6 months and then be as good as someone who's been coding all their life. But like when I start a project, I'm like, well, code. Okay, let's go learn how to code. Mm-hmm. Build this thing. Okay, you know, building, edit this video. Let me go and learn if I can do it. And I always know those things are not my expertise, but like in my mind, it's like, it's okay. I'm going to go do it. I'm going to learn mm-hmm. it. So that was sort of my attitude at the beginning, whatever, I'm going to go learn it. And then I gradually realized that, okay, my time's better allocated to do other things rather than trying to learn code, because I'm not going to code as quality as needed. Mm-hmm. It's going to take me years. So I kind of tried to basically find a developer through friends and family. Mm-hmm. And I had someone who joined at the beginning, and then he had to go and start something else. And then I found someone else who kind of came in as a technical co-founder. But then he decided it's going to take a long time. And he had two kids. He has two kids and another corporate jobs. And he was the family was dependent on his salary. So we realized that's not going to work. Then he left and we found another developer. So it's all like we found this one. And so, mm-hmm. so basically, I learned to be very... find the best option, like be very resourceful with technical development as much mm-hmm. as possible until we actually had enough funds to be able to have like a stable technical team.
And what I really like about StockCard.io, and I want, you know, you to give everyone kind of like the pitch, is it's the whole idea of, you know, using data to make more precise decisions as it, you know, pertains to investing. And it's really that anyone, especially retail investors, which I learned from you, is just the fancy way of saying like normal mm-hmm. people are retail investors. But like anyone can be in the stock market and imagine a day where people don't make investment mistakes ever mm-hmm. because we're using the power of data. So can you kind of, you know, give your, you know, like, hey, I met you in the elevator and I have 60 seconds to learn about StockCard.io. What do you guys do?
Yeah. So StockCard, we built it for, as you said, individual investors. And it's a platform that help people make the best investment decision they want without worrying about making stupid mistakes. And a lot of us do make stupid mistakes when it comes to stock market. And classic examples is I do it all the time, like you follow the hype, you follow the news, and then you get FOMO, fear of missing out. And then you kind of get in something without doing research, or you or you want to do research, you don't know how, or you try to do research, but it's just time consuming and you give up at some point. And I'm like, I'm just going to do it, or I'm not going to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So we do these, I call them these little stupid mistakes that are very costly. So we are a platform that uses the power of data and data analytics, but also data visualization to make it simple and easy for anyone with any background can make investment decisions. That's really the gist of it. I think there is tons of companies out there that claim and try to do that, and some of them are successful at doing that. Mm-hmm. But they're doing it in different ways, right? They put a lot of burden on the retail investor or individual investors. So there's a lot of companies that provide a lot of good data, a lot of even like magnitude of series of new additional data that we could have ever imagined in the past to have access to. But the burden is on the retail investor or individual investors to go learn how to use that data. Mm-hmm. So there's this data, there's on the side you have data, and on the other side you have decision, and then this process of how to you take this decision into an insight and how to use that data into a decision. Most of the tools out there put that burden of connecting these two pieces together by the investor. And then the reality mm-hmm. of that is that individual investors, unless they're so passionate about this thing and then they spend all of their weekends and things like that, they're not going to get similar to a professional investors. And even professional, like we can talk about the professional investors as well, that how many sort of the stupid mistakes they make, but mm-hmm. like that's not our target customer. So we said, why can't we use the power of technology and visualization, analytics and visualization to just close that gap? The data would be as easy as digestible as if you're buying a pair of shoes or buying a t-shirt. So you really know what to look for and you really know what's good and what's bad. And that's really what StockCard's about.
And I love this because I think you've keyed into a few primary reasons why people, again, I think especially so many like women were, you know, you can't see me right now because we're on a podcast, but Hoda can see me. I'm like doing this like back away, hands up in the air kind of stance because we're just like, oh my gosh, it's so much information. I don't know where to start. I'm terrified of making an error. I don't, mm-hmm. you know, like it's money. I take this seriously. Like I don't want to do something stupid. But also I think you've really understood that like, listen, in order to empower retail or individual investors, we need to make it, you know, digestible. We need to kind of sift through all of the noise to deliver them, you know, factual information, and then they can make their own choice. And I think, you know, I have a lot of friends that look at like behavioral economics, and mm-hmm. what behavioral economics assumes is, you know, A, the organism is always right, but B, the organism is also often irrational. Mm-hmm. You know, so like you said, like people might invest because of FOMO or it sounds nice. And so what I like that you guys do is we're just like, hey, we're going to give you a balanced perspective. Mm-hmm. And you can make your own choices, but we're also going to deliver this information to you in a way that's very consumable mm-hmm. And is clear. And then you could decide what you want to do. And by empowering, you know, these users, it allows people to feel confidence and to kind of build up those muscles and to get more, you know, comfortable making investment decisions. Because what most people do, especially in the like American financial structure, is they pay people to make those investment decisions on their behalf. And what I think they don't realize is, and not to say that there's not a role for mm-hmm. advisors, et cetera, I'm not suggesting that, mm-hmm. but I think a lot of people don't understand that over time, this becomes thousands of dollars that they never see because it's mm-hmm. going to pay for fees that mm-hmm. they don't necessarily need to be paying because they don't necessarily need an intermediary. In some mm-hmm. cases, they can be empowered to do this themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just this whole, I mean, last time also we talked about this idea of don't touch your money, like go work hard, make mm-hmm. money. And you know, just live your life. And then whatever is left, give it to somebody else to manage it for you. And don't ask questions and don't know what the hell is happening. And just trust the system to take care of it or trust this people that take care of it. I just don't think that's relevant anymore. And, you know, it's also the same, like in any other aspects of our life, like God forbid something happens to you in your house. The number one thing you would do is just you Google it and you read about mm-hmm. the doctor that you try to get second opinion and, mm-hmm. you know, you research what is this thing. You think about your side effects of if you're taking a medication, what can you do, what lifestyle choices or like help, you know, things you could do in order to better your situation. So we, even in a, something as extreme as health, that is very difficult to maybe like learn about those things, we do all these due diligence, if you wish, right? Mm-hmm. But then when it comes to the money, we're like, oh, I don't know. This guy's the expert. Just do whatever you want to do with my money. So I have a clear, I have had so many examples of conversations with my friends that they would give me, they would show their screen and they're like, oh, I have this thing in Fidelity, or I have, and nothing against Fidelity. I just came because that's the latest example. It was in Fidelity, but like any other platform, it doesn't matter. And I just don't know what the hell this is. And then you look at their account and they're like, their money is being managed because they change jobs. So it's in like freaking 50 different accounts and it's being, one of them is doing worse than everybody else. One of them is doing great, but it's charging an exuberant amount of fees. And then when you ask the person how much fee you're asking, they're like, I don't know. Why did you invest in this? What is the goal? I don't know. What is your plan for this? I have no idea. So I'm not against people working with financial advisors. I think it's the really good ones if people are not excited and passionate about doing the due diligence and research themselves. But the minimum of it is just know where your money is at and why is it at and how much you're paying for the service you're receiving, and is the service you're receiving as a financial advisor is in comparison to return you're gaining, is it in alignment? And I think that's just the basic. We do it in every other aspect of our life. You hire a plumber, you ask yourself, is the quality good? Is it worth it? You hire whatever, you know, you go to grocery, you know, we just don't ask those questions about money. And I think that's the attitude that needs to change. And we hopefully StockCard can help with that a little bit. But generally, forget about a stock card, I guess, in our lives. I think a lot of us just tend to, as soon as it comes to money, we're like, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, there's something else that someone does. And that's like the interesting thing, because money for most people is, you know, this like precious commodity. It allows us to have choices and, you know, drives like decisions that we make or don't make. And so then for us to have something that is, you know, so valuable, to put in such little effort to understand or feel that it's even something that I can, you know, work to better, you know, handle myself and be empowered is, yeah, it's just like, what? Mm-hmm. Like you said, you're like, you would literally do this in no other parts of your life, but in the part where like this kind of matters the most, you're willing to just be like, meh. And I want to be really clear for folks, like, you know, if you're sitting around and you have, you know, $10,000 in like your trusty savings account at Bank of America or Wells Fargo, let us be clear. You are making like 0.001% return on that money, if you're lucky. And if you look historically at the stock market over time, the return is far greater. And so it's one of those things where you're like, okay, I know that I can make more money over here, but I'm here. And what I like that, you know, StockCard.io does is like, hey, like, let us give you some information. So you're ready to like, you know, make that choice from moving it from your 0.001% return to, you know, something that is going to yield something better. But also something that I like that you do, and I think you have a really balanced approach for looking at this, is money can also be something that you have fun with. Not everything has to be this like super serious investment. And I think people need to kind of evaluate like their risk and kind of what they're willing to do. And like, sometimes you can just do it for fun. So what are some ways that you've been able to like create fun with some of your investments?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things about it. I can talk about it. I think money can be your the financial reflection of who you are. And I truly believe it. Like, where you invest and what you put your money in can basically be the financial reflection of you and your values, right?
So you're telling me that I'm Sephora is basically what
it's Yes, you might be. You might be all that.
And I'm Starbucks. I'm Sephora and Starbucks. And so
that's great. I mean, Starbucks would be a very good investment. Good stock. Sephora is not, unfortunately, I don't think it's a public company. I've never looked at them, but there are some other luxury brands I'm sure you could invest in. But so, yeah, I mean, isn't that fun though? Like you would, I you know, to me is like I walk the grocery aisle, or like now I do Instacart and I'm just looking at Instacart, and so I only buy the groceries that not only, but mostly buy the groceries of the companies that I own their stock in. And it's like such little pleasure, guilty pleasure in life. It's like, I'm going to help you and I'm not going to help you, because if I help you, as if like my $50 grocery that day going to make a difference. But it's just like a little funny thing that I do. And I have the same feeling about a lot of brands. And to me, that's fun. And I think it would make you connect to the companies that you're investing in, because you're investing in companies that either you believe in their mission, or if you're or you are a consumer of their product, or you are exploring a new company. Like a lot of, like for example, there's this brand of energy drinks that I want to invest in their, I've heard about their stock and I want to invest in their stock, and I haven't yet pulled the trigger because I'm trying to order the drink to come to, like I can't find them in grocery store. And then that's to me like, oh, I can't find them in grocery store. Is that, do these guys have a good distribution channel? Like maybe I'm very nerdy about it, but I think it's fun exploring new companies, looking at these people that you're putting your money in, who they are, what they do, what is their product, are you interested? You know, so like I never invested in tobacco companies, and I don't have anything against them. They're actually been one of the fantastic investments in the past decade. But I just never invested because I don't want to do that.
It's not your values.
Yeah. It's not my values, right? So I think that's one part of the fun, having fun with it. The other part of having fun with your money is that you would use, like I would never go on a very good trip or like do something very crazy for myself unless I earn that money in the stock market, right? And then I always say, you know, I have this classic examples of Apple iPhone, and Apple iPhones every generation becomes more expensive and more expensive. And I have this, you know what I mean? You know, right? Like you keep upgrading. It's like
always
okay, 600, like, 900, 1,000. Yeah. And then he's like, it keeps going back.
And
up,
we keep paying it.
We keep paying it. Yeah. You keep paying it. But imagine, so I have this like hidden portfolio that I wrote about it. It's just Apple. And then it basically mirror every time that an Apple, new generation of Apple iPhones come out, you would put $1,000 in Apple's stock. And then by the time the next generation comes in, not only you have earned the value of that new generation, but you have earned then some. So you could get that Apple Watch as well. And you could get the other Apple accessories. So to me is that, why can't we use, like the stock market doesn't have to be, okay, retirement, that I'm not going to never touch it. And it's going to be 35 years until I touch it. It could also be this fun, like this aspiration, this is fun bucket. Like you can have these buckets of stuff, and then you would say, oh, I want to go on this amazing vacation, let me try to earn that vacation through my stock market investment. And there's nothing wrong with that, and I think that's actually fantastic, right? As long as you don't do crazy stuff. You know, the Apple example is a very good example, right? You know, you could basically just fund your iPhones with investments in Apple. To me, that's very interesting. You could teach it to your kids or to your family, and that can be a little bit of fun things. Those are some of the examples of money can be fun and money can be challenging. We do those things in our life, right? Like we go and do a 5K marathon or a 10K marathon. Like everybody now, like everybody wants to run, and everybody want to do like Spartan race, and everyone are like, why don't we have a Spartan race of a stock market, right? I mean, that's sort of the same concept, I guess.
Yeah. So I'm going to shift a little bit to put your CEO entrepreneur hat on. What are like the top, you know, 3, 4, 5 things that you like deeply wish that you knew, that you know now before you started your company, that you're like, yeah, this would have been super helpful information to have 5 years ago?
Yeah. I think two things. One is it takes a lot more money than you think. And whatever you think it is, you can just double it more, because you're never going to end up into that place and say, okay, I build everything that I wanted. Never, because it's like a moving target. Yeah, there's no done. There's no done. Yeah. And then it's always evolving, and you're building things. And, you know, if you want to be a good company, you got to evolve to what your users say, what the market says, all that sort of stuff. So it always takes longer and more money than what it is. And then the second one is team. I feel like everybody says team is very, very important, but like you don't realize it until you want to like hire a it's something like a program, like the very classic, not classic, but very real example is like I'm trying to hire a blog editor for 2 months and I cannot just find a person who would follow the instructions I give them, you know, and also be some creative, add some creativity. And I think the idea of that, they say you always have to, when they say the CEOs needs to always hire and always be in the mood of hiring, or it's good to have people from your school alumni or your previous work and keep relationship with them because you always want to work with them at some point. It's very, very real. And I did not really pay attention to that until I realized, oh my God, I need so many people. It takes so much time to find the right people. I should have built these relationships so much stronger before that I could just call up someone and say, hey, are you interested? We're doing this thing. Interesting. Come see what we are building. I think that's the second one. And the third one, if I go back and I want to start my company again, I start building relationship with investors like VCs and angel investors way, way sooner. I would do it like 5 years before I quit my job because these things are, you assume these things needs to be very logical things. And if you build a great company and it's performing and you're growing, people are going to just run and give you their money. But that's not what's happening in real world. These are very human-based, relationship-based kind of decisions. And people don't give, like, good examples of it, when COVID-19 hit, somebody told me, you would not be able to raise money until you sit in the same room with this investor that you're trying to pursue. And if he has never sat in the same room with you, he's not going to trust and give his money to you. Yeah. And maybe that was like very harsh and maybe that's not right, but it's 80% right. It's all about that feeling comfortable. So if I go back, I would start building my talent relationship and my investor relationship like 5 years earlier than starting my company.
No, I think that that's incredibly valuable. I do a lot of consulting for private equity and venture capital in the behavior analytics space. And I just had a meeting earlier today where I introduced them to a business owner that I really like what he's doing and thinks I think they might be a good match in terms of them bringing on the investment. And it was so interesting because in our kind of like, you know, postmortem on the call, they're like, yeah, we really liked him. We can't wait to meet him for lunch. We can't wait to develop this relationship. And I think people have this kind of like binary viewpoint on investment. It's like, well, I make this stock, this like great, you know, slide deck. And then I have like, you know, this really good pro forma. And so then I give it to people and then they just give me money. But this is largely, this is relational. It's on some levels and at some point it's emotional. It's also, of course, you know, tons of analytics and strategy and diligence, but it's all of those things and those take time. When I knew that I wanted to sell my company, I started 5 years before I signed to build relationships, to understand better. And it took 5 years to find that right buyer, that right relationship that, you know, and it was, you know, a long process that involved, you know, really leaning on the network and being willing to, you know, take meetings and that's, you know, yeah, start doing it no matter what you want to do in your life, like networks and really kind of having a greater understanding of the important players in your space and also kind of where you want to head in your future. You know, all of those relationships should start now.
Yeah.
What's like your most favorite thing about being an entrepreneur? And you can have more than one thing. Like if you have a couple of things, that's fine. Like what are the things that when you wake up every morning, you're like, hell yeah, I made the right choice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, specifically to Stockard, I just love, I mean, if I have all the money in the world, I would just keep continuing to investing. And it's not about like making more return, like making more money. It's just the process that the nerdy part of process of discovering interesting companies to invest in. That's just like fascinating to me. And the fact that I can work and build a product that is getting other people closer and me, myself, closer to this place that I have in my mind that nobody makes any investment mistake and everybody is just reflecting what they value in their and put their money behind that. That's just fantastic. A lot of times if I get really frustrated or tired of the process of building the company, I just kind of spend one day just investing or like just learning about investing or thinking about investing or like doing something or using the product just to just do that. So I think that part I really love. I think I was just lucky to work, build a company in a business that I'm passionate about and I'm like user number one. I think actually there's like two or three users that they use the platform more than me, but I'm crazy. Like I use our platform I'm always there. I'm always listening. Mm-hmm. I'm always paying attention. Maybe there's two or three guys that are better than me. Because somehow they have found more time than need to be on the stock card. But so that's number one. Number two is just, although your destiny, it's not as I thought, I'm going to go and, you know, we talked about it. I said, I'm going to go make it. And every decision is going to be me. And I'm just going to harvest the result of my own work. It's not there. I realized after I went and built the company, started building the company, I realized actually it's very similar to your corporate life. You're still dependent on so many other people and their decisions, all that sort of stuff. But it's still so much better than being in a corporate life. Mm-hmm. So to me, just the process of discovering what to build and how to build it and, you know, how to fund building it and all that sort of stuff, just this whole process of building something is extremely exciting. And the fact that I have control over it is, to me, it's somewhat have some control over it is very interesting to me. And I really love it. The other one is I just love the lifestyle. And I told you at the beginning, I don't have balanced working life. I'm crazy mm-hmm. and I keep working until I crash. And somehow I just enjoy that. I think that's just being busy and being able to do the things that I like, just very interesting to me. But, you know, it's also fun. It's also help that, not fun, but it's helpful that I don't have any kids and my husband is very busy and we have a dog who is crazy, but also the only thing that I really need to take care of is that dog. So, I mean, I have that freedom to do that kind of stuff as well. But yeah, I mean, those are some of the interesting stuff about building your own company.
Well, and I've framed all of these conversations I've been having in terms of what I call the four P's, which is, you know, what are you passionate about? And for you, it's an investing and, you know, better understanding how this works. What's the problem? And the problem you identified is really like, okay, you have, you know, this money, and then there's all these kind of decisions that you can make. And how do you get from, you know, the data to the insights to be able to make the right decisions? And you really kind of looked at this in a way to make investing available to anybody. And I love that. Like, hey, let's democratize investing. This isn't just for, like, you know, rich people. And then also just looking at, like, this, the fact that you're in your product all the time lets me know how much you pay attention to the process, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what's the process? And like, what is the user experience here? Mm-hmm. What is, you know, how do we design this better? How do we get the right people on our team to make sure that we're focused on always, you know, delivering the most accurate information in a way that, you know, is visually, you know, interesting and brings people back. And those three P's are how you get to profitability. Mm-hmm. And I, at least for me, I think the best businesses are the ones where people have this incredible passion and a very clear idea of the problem that they're trying to solve, because that's where you just get that energy. I mean, if you know, working like your corporate jobs, you know, you kept doing more work and I'm sure you were fantastic, but I can only imagine it's a very different feeling that you get to choose to be exhausted because mm-hmm. you're working on something that's so important to you.
Yeah.
That's a different kind of exhaustion versus like, I'm so exhausted because I'm like on this wheel that I feel like I can't get off of. And there's like no kind of different direction to go than just to continue to be in the wheel.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that there's not great places to work, because I also know something that you are very mindful about is the kind of culture that you have within your company. Mm-hmm. And I think so many entrepreneurs and business owners often try to create something that either they wanted to replicate from something they've experienced, but more often it's because they want to create something that they've never experienced.
Yeah.
And that I think is, you know, the cool thing. Like, not everyone's going to be able to be an entrepreneur, but everyone can find meaning in the work that they do if they're working at a place that fundamentally finds meaning in them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and that's very true.
You know, and that's also like pretty great. Like, I love that. Like, oh my gosh, my, you know, company is supporting all of these, you know, patients that receive services and all these clients and people are happy and they feel, you know, well taken care of, and they get to develop and they get to learn things, and like, I did that. And like, you're doing that too.
Yeah.
And I think that's exciting. So I'm gonna, of course, link StockCard.io to the show notes because I want everybody to check it out. I mean, just so you guys know, like, Hoda writes is a very gifted writer. Your writing is incredible. You also have your own podcasts. And also before we went live, just so you know, Hoda and Alan, our producer, were talking about how do we create a stock card game or a stock market game show. I'm all about this. So I want to be involved, even though I will likely win nothing. But I, you know, I just, I love the fact that like you took stock, pun intended, in your career. And instead of saying like, gosh, I'm not going to value myself enough, you know, to do something else. I'm just going to kind of keep doing this job. You're like, you know what? I think I got this and I can do something great. And that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's really awesome.
Thank you. No, I appreciate that. Yeah. Stock market show would be game would be really, really, really cool. We should have you there for sure. Yeah. You should be our first contestant.
Okay. I will be the least successful contestant, but I'll show up because I always want to learn more. I want to show up.
That's what counts.
Thank you so much for listening to the Defy podcast. We hope that you enjoyed listening to this as much as we enjoyed making it. You can listen to this podcast on all of the podcast platforms. We would love your feedback. Please tell us what you think. We also invite you to follow us on all of our social platforms. We're on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. We're even on TikTok. And if you ever have an idea of something that you'd like us to talk about in a podcast or just want to shoot us a note, please feel free to email us. You can email me, Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, at defy.community. And guess what? I promise that I'll respond. So I hope you have a great rest of your day and get out there and go defy, baby.